I'm in Hove, not in Brighton.
Hove,
actually, is Caroline Sturtridge, who I've known for a long time, but we'll come to that. Maybe that should be our first question. Where did we first meet?
It must have been the Christian Union at Edinburgh University.
Yeah, I think it must have been in the Chaplaincy Centre. Did you go there for lunch sometimes?
I did, yes, because they had a good lunch and it was quite cheap.
These were two really important factors about the Chaplaincy Centre lunch.
Yeah, when you're a student.
Yeah.
Yes, so probably. It might have been the Chaplaincy Centre or it could have been the Christian Union. I can't remember. It's too long ago.
And it was 1989.
I can't remember whether it was 89 or 90.
I think it was 89. Yeah. I went the autumn of 89 and we met really quickly.
Yes, we did.
So, best things about the Chaplaincy Centre lunch, they're all coming back to me now. The soup.
Soup was good.
I sometimes would splash out and have an egg roll.
I think I often had the tuna. Tuna roll.
And then if I was feeling really extravagant, I'd have a packet of Discos as well.
Now that was extravagant.
It was great. I have no idea. Well, they wouldn't be allowed to do that now because it was just made in a little back porter's kitchen, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, health and safety, there was none of that. Food safety, food quality, nothing.
But it was really nice.
Yeah, it was.
It was really good. Question number two, do you drink tea?
I think the answer to that is yes.
Yes.
I may have over 50 varieties of tea in my kitchen.
You see why I was really keen to come here as well, because I haven't seen you for ages.
Yes, it's been far too long.
It has been a long time. Yeah. It isn't very many miles, but it's actually quite an awkward drive.
Yes, it's all cross country.
Yeah. And what's your favourite cup of tea?
I think it would have to be something smoky. Probably Lapsang. But I have probably four or five different smoky teas that I would have. Currently having a smoky Earl Grey.
I was trying to sniff what I'm having. Am I having the same?
You're not having the same, but I think actually you might have my tea and I might have yours. Because I think they're both Earl Grey,
okay.
But mine was Earl Grey Blue Flowers. No, but mine was Smoky Earl Grey, and yours was Earl Grey Blue Flowers. And I think this might actually
be. Do we need to swap?
If you're happy with that, I'm happy with this.
I'm very happy with this. We had, Neil was talking about something which was very smoky, and we discussed whether or not was that, because it was like drinking whiskey in your tea. So Neil Marshall, I went to see.
Yeah.
And was he part of the people that we used to have lunch with? Do you remember?
I do not remember. I don't remember him, so maybe not.
And yes. So they're the tea questions. So we'll do the big question that I'm asking everybody now. How do you respond to the statement, Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
I would agree with that. And I think it's the church is viewed, I think, from people who don't go, as being a bit boring. And there are so many pressures on people's time that they're just like, we won't start going to church because it's just a bit too, right, there's too much for everybody else that we've got to do, and there's lots of children's activities that are also happening on sort of Sunday mornings. So I think that all those sort of pressures on people's time sort of work against the church. But I think if you actually asked people sorry, they're having windows fitted next door.
Oh, okay, that's fine. Carry on, I'll be able to edit most of the window fitting out.
Yeah, I didn't know they were doing that.
That's okay.
So I think, but if you asked people, like if they really had to, they'd probably say that they were Christian or had church affiliations, but just most people don't go. But maybe that's my upbringing, because I was brought up in the church and everybody I knew went to church pretty much.
So do you go to church on a Sunday?
I don't go to church anymore, I'm afraid to say. There was a little bit of an issue, and this is also something which affects people going to church, at the church that I was at, and the ministers were basically, they left. And it was a bit aggro, shall we say. And I sort of stopped going at that point, and then we're often doing things on weekends, so I sort of got out of the habit. And I think if you get out of the habit, it's quite hard to get back into that habit, particularly if you don't have a regular church that you've been to. So I go to church when I go to see my mum. So if I'm there at the weekend, I'll go to her church and for Easter and Christmas. So. And I still go to Holiday Forum, the Christian conference for the URC.
So I knew you were still doing that. So, yeah.
Yeah, that probably pops up on Facebook quite a bit.
Yeah. Yes, it does. So you had you're very privileged because I gave you more than three extra questions to choose from. So which ones did you choose?
I figured that you'd gone through my Facebook to find the questions to ask.
Do you know, I don't have very many Facebook friends, so it means I actually do genuinely know what my Facebook friends are doing.
That's very good. It's a great way of keeping in touch with people.
I've now got 50. Two of those have died, but I haven't taken them off.
Okay.
So 48.
Okay, yeah, that's a manageable number.
It is. So okay. I don't particularly troll you for the questions. So which question did you go for?
What was it really like doing the London Marathon? And what did you learn about yourself and other people from doing it? So what was it like? It was wonderful, awful, amazing, tiring, and I would never do it again.
You trained for a long time, didn't you?
I did. I knew that I wouldn't be able to do it unless I trained, because I was going to have to walk it because I can't run because of my knees. So I knew it was going to take a long time to do. And you have to tell them how long you think it's going to take. And it took me 6 years of applying to get in, because I would always put 10 hours. And they don't want you on the course that long. They start clearing up.
Okay.
So, I knew that I would have to train, and I trained all through the winter. And in the snow and everything, because I knew that if I didn't do that, I just wouldn't be able to do it. And what I actually found was that I would take the train along the coast to Goring and then just walk all the way back. And that way I had to keep going.
Because you were stuck.
Because I was stuck otherwise. I wasn't anywhere near the railway by then. I was just on the coast, just walking all the way. So, yeah, I'm glad I did it. What I learned about myself was that you can do anything if you put in the effort and you put your mind to it, and it was something I always wanted to do, but I would never do it again. And Gemma said she would actually kill me if I tried, because she didn't like it at all, because she could see how much it was hurting and all of that when I was doing it. So.
And what was your time in the end?
8 hours, 2 minutes.
So that's a considerable.
Well, the 10 hours was sort of an overestimate, because you just don't know how many times you're going to have to stop to go to the loo, for example, things you don't think about when you're training.
I would think about that a lot.
Obviously, I stopped when I was training, but the other day, and obviously you train through the winter. It's the same for the London and the Brighton Marathons. You train through the winter, and then when it comes to the actual day, it's really hot. Well, it's often really hot. So you're drinking more, and you have to go to the loo more. So I just didn't know how long it was going to take. And I never did 26.2 miles in my training, because they say you never do as many miles as it is. You do something like 80%, and then once you've done that, you know that you can do the rest. And there are bits of the course which are just soul-destroying, especially when you're walking like I am. So you're going through Canary Wharf, and it's just looping round and round Canary Wharf, and you just don't... There's just skyscrapers and no real landmarks other than that. And by the time I got there, there weren't many people there either.
So were there people who finished behind you?
There were people who finished behind me. I was quite surprised about that. And in actual fact, when I turned the corner into the mall, they were just about to disconnect the clock. And they saw me coming, and they left the clock on so that I could see... which I thought was very nice of them, because they were clearing up. They started clearing up from 2 miles in.
Mm-hmm.
So they cleared up the course around me. But there were people who finished behind me. Some of those are people who hadn't trained and had spent 5 hours in the medical tent at somewhere, at some parts of the course, and then eventually finish. Because there are people who think they can just do a marathon without training. I don't know why.
It's always been something that I've wondered whether I would ever have the capacity to do.
You would. But you have to train. You can't just turn up. I did see one guy who was carrying a surfboard round, and he did not look very happy at all. And he obviously hadn't trained at all. He'd thought about, I could take a surfboard round. That was obviously his costume. He hadn't thought about it at all. Carrying a surfboard for 26.2 miles is a long way.
Yeah, I think there was a kind of key word in that statement of he. So which of the other questions have you decided to prompt for?
Do you think it's now okay to be a geek? And if so, what do you think made the change? So my answer to that would obviously be yes, I am one. But I think it has become a lot more acceptable. And I think the comic book franchises in the movies and big names like Joss Whedon, they've had a lot to do with that, because they portray themselves as, people like that portray themselves as geek. The comic book franchises have been immensely popular. So all of that has sort of brought geekdom into the mainstream. And people wear comic t-shirts and things like that without thinking about it now. Whereas before, you'd be seen as quite a bit of a geek and don't go near them. They're a bit strange. So I think that's had a lot to do with it.
So my children have always watched Big Bang Theory.
Yep.
And not always from when they were tiny, but from probably slightly before I was really comfortable that they were, because of some of the kind of sexual content. They've watched it. I would watch it with them, and we'd have discussions about what we just sort of seen or talk about. But for them, I thought it was quite a good thing that. Mm-hmm. That actually kind of it really humanised some of that geekiness.
Yes, I don't know that the Big Bang Theory always portrays geeks in a good way. I think some of the jokes around Sheldon, I do find a bit too close to the bone. But then that is his character, and there are people who are like that. But it has helped in quite a lot of people who would not have watched that sort of programme sort of 20 years ago quite happily say, oh yeah, I watched Big Bang Theory, and very happy to talk about it.
I asked somebody who I may yet interview, so I need to I asked somebody to explain something that I'd seen on Facebook, which was a series of equations. And I said to him, I'm not sure whether I want to use these in my Christmas sermon. Can you explain how I would say them as out loud if I wanted to do that? And are they right? He's a theoretical physicist. And his Facebook message back to me went, these are the engineer's versions of the Maxwell Light equations. I would put them more elegantly into one equation.
Okay.
And once I stopped laughing, I copied what he said and put it in my... I did use it in my sermon for Christmas. That it was for a midnight service at Christmas. He just tutted over these engineer's equations.
Engineers
hurt, yeah. And I guess because the sort of school that the girls are at is, because it's selective,
right,
actually has a quite high geek level amongst the people who are there. They're not all geeks by any means, but it's okay for them. They kind of go into that slot, and that's absolutely fine for them. And I'm so relieved that kind of people have moved on in that way.
Yeah, it's no longer seen as socially unacceptable to be a geek.
There was that thing, wasn't it? Be nice to the nerds, you'll end up working for them.
Yeah. still have to be nice to the IT people sometimes, but...
Yeah, so what was the other question that you plumped for answering?
Well, it was a difficult choice after that, but I did go for should adults do more Lego, because I am a geek and I do like Lego. And, of course, the answer is yes, because I do Lego all the time. But I think it's so much fun to do, but also you can either make up your own models, designs, whatever, or you can just follow a plan and you don't have to think. It's sort of a good way of clearing your headspace, because you're just following the plan and finding that bit and sticking them together, and then eventually you have this wonderful model. I just built the TARDIS. That's my most recent kit. And who doesn't want to build a Millennium Falcon?
Well, indeed. Yeah, we have... I think we may have the same TARDIS as you, just being built in our house. But a bit got stuck on to the wrong bit and I had to take it off. I didn't actually spend any time building it, but I was required, my assistance was required to remove the bit from the other bit. There's a way of doing Lego now, which I've since heard about after I sent you the question, where people run like seminars and training about group structures using Lego.
I have not heard this.
So I shall try and find the contact for you that I know, but it's to do with how you see your team and building and all that sort of stuff. So I thought that was really interesting. In some industries there's a lot of talk about being creative at work, but I think a lot of people actually don't get the opportunity to be as creative as they want to be, or was that would actually be good for them.
Yes, it's a lot that like 90% isn't creative, and so you need that bit of creativity in your life.
And I guess it ties in with the mindfulness stuff about actually doing something where you do lose track of time, that if you don't ever do that, you get your it's really not good for your long-term
health.
Brain health.
Yeah. Because you're always on and you're never relaxing. Yeah.
And also you just don't get any of that kind of flow of that sort of thinking. So those were the extra questions. So the last question is, what's your favourite thing that begins with T?
That is so difficult. Because the obvious answer is T. But then there's technology. So I have an awful lot of technology and my life is ruled and involves a lot of technology. Gemma tells me it's the Albion, which is my football team. But I think I'm going to have to go back to tea, because nothing beats a good cup of tea.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Caroline.
That's okay.
It's been lovely to be here.
It's been lovely to have you here.